Calling all benders and non-benders alike, dive into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar, Braving the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Avatar Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Prince Zuko.
Each week, we'll explore a new episode of The Legend of Korra.
Find your balance as we uncover breaking news, trivia, special guests, and so much more.
I mean, I've got some flameo hot takes that'll really light a spark. Follow and listen to Avatar Braving the Elements on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Three guests on the show today. Michael Ginetti from Spot Track. That's the correct pronunciation of the salary cap and player contract site. Michael Ginetti runs it. He's the founder of it. He was on my podcast with me yesterday. You will hear that in about 20 minutes. Sean Springs will join us at 11. And then Stanford Steve on Scott's Sports Center and also College Game Day. He will do a college preview with us at some point during this show. I do want to start the show, though, with a what do you got? So last night, I watched Venus Williams in the U.S. Open. Had no idea she was playing in the U.S. Open. I turned the U.S. Open on, and there was Venus Williams at 45 years old playing in a first-round match, Arthur Ashe Stadium, in front of what looked like pretty much a sold-out crowd. And by the way, plenty of big names, including Maria Sharapova, who was there. The Bryan brothers, the winningest men's doubles team in history. Kim Clijsters, a Hall of Famer. Mark Ein was there, one of the owners of our Washington football franchise. Mark's a big tennis guy, as most of you know, and he was sitting in the Williams box. But she became the oldest competitor at the U.S. Open, male or female, since 47-year-old Renee Richards in 1981. So some 44 years ago, there was a player playing at an older age than 45. But Venus Williams was out there, and I just didn't turn it off because it's Venus Williams. To me, the Williams sisters are way up on the list of the best sports stories of this century. And really, it started late last century, because she made her debut at the U.S. Open at 16 years old, I believe, in 1997. And then Serena came on shortly thereafter. But the story of, you know, King Richard, Richard Williams, and the development of his two daughters and the hustling around to get them the proper training, starting in, you know, the public courts of Compton, California. It's such a great movie. It's such a great story. And by the way, almost everybody that has commented on that movie, which is now, what, 4 or 5 years old, has said it is almost to the, you know, second accurate about Richard's development of his daughters, and then the daughters taking what they had been given. But there is something about the two of them. I've been a huge Serena fan during her career, always watched tennis, not because of Serena. I was a big tennis fan, but Serena is the one that kept me into it as I was sort of fading on a lot of the men's tennis. There's something incredibly classy and elegant and tough and purposeful and resilient about the Williams sisters, and you saw it on display last night with Venus at 45 years old, playing the number 13 woman in the world, Muhova from Czechoslovakia. She won the second set 6-2. This is after a 16-month layoff, but about 3 weeks ago, she started to play again and, you know, work her way into what was a wild card entrant into the field. To me, people complain about, you know, certain wild card entries into golf tournaments or tennis tournaments. Look, those sports are still sports that need to be marketed, and there's no better marketing opportunity than Venus Williams at 45 years of age on the biggest court at the U.S. Open. Man, she was crafty. the pace on her serve, she would go for it in a big way with her incredible athleticism and strength, even at 45 years old. And then she'd slice one in, barely, you know, into the ad court where it would kick and just bounce out. There's something about her that I find myself rooting for. She is not done. She is talking about a more significant comeback, although her press conference was pretty emotional. In fact, Max, you've got some of it, right? Why don't you play some of Venus from her post-match press conference last night?
What did you prove to yourself?
What did I prove to myself? I think for me, getting back on the court was about giving myself a chance to play more healthy. And when you play unhealthy, it's in your mind. It's not just how you feel. You get stuck in your mind, too. It was nice to be freer.
She's had a lot of injuries, as most players and athletes have when they get into their 30s and now mid-40s. She said at one point, she said, "There were shots I missed, those kind of shots about feel and less about training, and those are the kinds of things that I couldn't stave off today. I had a lot of returns. I was right there." And then she kind of threw up her hands because it was a sort of an alternately very emotional and at times borderline weepy press conference, and then a lot of laughter as well. She's got a very good sense of humor. Both of them do. And she just threw up her hands and laughed and said, "But it wasn't really my fault." That's the best way I can put it, in a very tongue-in-cheek moment. Too bad she didn't win. I think there was a lot of people watching that match last night that thought, can you imagine if she pulls off an upset Carolina Muhova was number 13 seeded, I believe, 11th ranked in the world, something like that. Or maybe it was 11th seeded, 13th ranked in the world. That actually makes more sense. She was just younger and better at this point. But can you imagine had she pulled off the win? It would have been one of the great sports stories of the year if Venus Williams at 45 years old had won a match at a Grand Slam. She's a 7-time Grand Slam winner, 49 career titles, one of the greats, a Hall of Famer, an incredible sort of presence last night at the U.S. Open, which needs it. You know, it needs it. I think it does. I think tennis right now still, there's some excitement. I'm not suggesting that there isn't some excitement with, you know, the likes of Alcaraz and still Djokovic out there pounding away. But it needed a storyline desperately, and it could have had one for a couple of more nights. But she just got beat by a better player who is right now in more game shape. Fun to watch Venus Williams last night. I think it's been really fun to follow their career and sort of understand their story, because it's an amazing one. All right. Yesterday was one of those days. God, man, social media is the worst. I'm going to read some of this stuff. This is from Eli. Eli, Kevin, admit it. You had it all wrong. $32 million a year. $30 million signing bonus means the guaranteed money is going to be $65 million or more. Terry and his nincompoop agent, LOL, won this negotiation by KO, as in knockout. From Don, Terry outlasted in the long battle. From Kenny, I'm sure Commando Kev will use his airtime today to lecture us on how Terry still doesn't deserve it. Terry's agent is an idiot for getting him what he wants, and how the front office are geniuses for dragging it out so Terry misses camp, but they gave him what he wants anyways. The agent that Sheehan and other radio experts repeatedly dragged through the mud, Commando Kev, owes them both an apology, but we all know Commando Kev never admits when he's wrong. Just don't call me Commando Kev anymore, Kenny, please. This from Ken, not Kenny. Kevin, I really was kind of neutral on Terry getting his money, but I thought about you when the news broke and about his contract. Now I guess you will spin it on the radio that you were always in favor of this outcome, LOL. You sports media people are so funny and mostly inaccurate. I could read another 6 dozen tweets and emails just like the 4 or 5 that I just read. Days like yesterday are interesting. You know, I'm never surprised. I am always interested, curious, more so, maybe a bit mystified as to why some of you continue to kind of make the same mistake over and over again. You know, whether it was on Eric Bieniemy or Carson Wentz or Sam Howell, the list could go on, where you fire so quickly and so confidently when you just don't have enough of the information. I mean, was yesterday your first experience with contract news? You guys know what these initial reports are. The lack of detail, and many times they just end up being marketing pitches by agents. I mean, the biggest red flag on yesterday's announcement was what I said, you know, as it came down, where's the guaranteed dollar number? That's rather important information. It's why you weren't going to hear me say what, you know, guys like Ian asked me to say, which is just admit it. Just admit it. Terry won the deal. He and his agent crushed it. Why would anybody who has ever paid attention to the NFL and contract announcements admit yesterday or even this morning, because there are no guaranteed dollars out yet, that they know which side won the deal? We don't know at this point. We'll know when the details come out. Maybe later today, but they haven't come out. The agent's side is out, and it is notable that the guaranteed money in the deal was missing from the agent's side. Real quickly, let me digress a bit. This from Jerry. Jerry writes, Kevin, it really doesn't matter who won the deal. Terry is in and will play this year. I don't understand the fascination with the deal details. The only thing that matters is Terry is back. There's no reason. And then he writes, there's no reason for you to apologize for being wrong. That was actually a good ending there, Jerry. Because you mocked me, but you also in a subtle way mocked the people. And there are plenty of them out there who believe that anybody that cares about the deal, now that it's done, and the details of the deal, like who got the better of the deal, who won the deal, somehow that makes you, you know, not a good fan, or missing the big picture, or not being able to move on. What are you talking about? I mean, come on. We've been talking about this thing for months. Like, this is, are you going to wait till the end of like a crime thriller, a whodunit, and just be satisfied with, oh, they told me they found him. They got him. He's in jail. Without being interested in the details? Of course the details are what most people are interested in. If you have a strong, first of all, there's just the idea that if you've got a strong opinion and you've taken a stance on something, you want to be right. That goes for you, that goes for me, and we will find out, you know, here today. I mean, this is what sports fans, you know, engage in. I don't get the oh, it's over, we don't need to talk about the details. Who cares? Because he's in. Well, of course he's in, and that's great news. But, you know, more than one thing can be, you know, discussed at a time. Like, you can want to be right about whatever opinion you had on the kind of deal that should be done for him, but also want the team and Terry to be happy that the long-term deal got done and hopefully both sides are okay with it. I wanted that to happen, and I thought it would happen much sooner, of course. I thought it would happen before training camp. But Kenny, I think it was Kenny, hold on. Yeah, Kenny, when you said that I would spin it as if I was always in favor of this outcome, well, yeah, I actually was in favor of this outcome. Now, if you meant to say that I wasn't in favor of the team overpaying Terry, that's true. So I could be reading it incorrectly. If you're saying I wasn't in favor of, you know, overpaying Terry, that I didn't want the team to go beyond, you know, 50 to 60 tops on guaranteed or 28, you know, 27, 28, 29 per year. Yeah, that's true. So if that's what you meant, that is probably true. Because anything above 60 and guaranteed for me would be a bad precedent to set. And Terry obviously wanted a lot more than 60 guaranteed. I don't know if you saw some of Ben's reporting or even Diana Russini's reporting that he was actually asking for, you know, basically just below Ja'Marr Chase initially. But I definitely wanted a deal done, and I always thought a deal would get done. I think I said that about 1,000 times during the last few months. I just didn't want the team to overpay him. That's true. But at this point, though, you know, we don't know the details. We don't know if the team caved or if Terry caved or if both caved or both, you know, putting it in a nicer light for those of you who don't like to discuss the details of contracts. They had a nice meeting somewhere in the middle. That's possible, too. I can tell you this. If the deal is as one-sided in Terry's favor as some of you believe it is, I think the agent would have said that. He would have given not only the years and the overall potential value up to $96 million, he would have provided information on the guaranteed money. Him not doing that is, I'm sure, the reason why you've seen many reporters reluctant, in terms of those who are covering this very closely, reluctant to sort of declare one side having gotten the better of the deal, because we don't know the details. When we get the details of the deal, I think if the guaranteed money's over 60, Terry and his agent did very well and they won the deal. I would say that anything between 55 and 60 in guaranteed money, call it a draw. Anything less than 55, team got what they wanted. Ian and I have a bit of a bet on DM. I basically said, you know, and anything more than 60, Terry won. He took that. Anything less than 60, the team won. But I would say, thinking about it, anything guaranteed between 55 and 60 is kind of both of them finding a middle ground. Anything less than 55 is a big cave by Terry. Anything more than 60 is a big cave by the team. I think the structure as it relates to how much the team owes after a year or two is a big tell on the deal as well. We'll find out that. If there's guaranteed money beyond 2026, big win for Terry. If, you know, there isn't a lot of sort of incentive earnout, that's a big win for Terry. If the team can get out sooner, better for them. You know, there's a lot of detail. The guaranteed money is the big tell more than anything else. But I'm going to reserve the right to wait for the actual details of the deal itself before admitting, hey, I was off on this one. Terry and Adam Peters will speak tomorrow. Adam Peters will address the media, and then Terry's going to talk after practice. And look, yes, the good news is Terry, presumably, I mean, knock on wood, will be there and will be happy and feel appreciated and feel respected and feel like the team acknowledged what he believes he is. I hope that that is how it comes together because I've always wanted a deal. I always thought it would happen because it's just better in this window with Jaden on a rookie deal that we've got Terry under contract for at least this year and next to take advantage of Jaden's rookie deal. And look, the bottom line is, man, this team has a chance. I was on a radio show this morning, the show that Denton produces now on the Bet QL network. And one of the hosts, Michael Jenkins was one of the hosts, but the female host, and I forget her name. She said, what do you think the best case scenario is for Washington this year? And I said, the Super Bowl. They have the best quarterback in the NFC. I guess you could argue Matt Stafford, if you want, or Jared Goff, or Jalen Hurts. I think they're all excellent quarterbacks. I don't think they're Jaden Daniels. And if you've got the best quarterback in the NFC, and in an era where offense typically is more important, that didn't used to be the case, the best case is Super Bowl. And Terry was going to play regardless of extension or no extension, but having Terry and having him have the opportunity to ramp up in kind of a much more positive atmosphere, let's hope that, you know, some of the concerns from some of you about, you know, soft tissue injuries and the things that you sometimes see when players report late. Let's hope that he's healthy. I think we've got enough time, enough of a ramp-up time. He's now 10 days off the PUP list. He's got another, at this point, 5, 7, 12 days until the opener. And really, out of those, you know, 8 real practice opportunities. But that's a lot. And Terry's smart. We know that. So he's been, you know, basically gathering what has been going on, whatever's new. But with him out there, in the right kind of atmosphere, contract extension, feeling good, no threat of, you know, potentially him being unprofessional at any point, which I never thought was a possibility. Debo in shape, a revamped and upgraded offensive line, year two in this system. Man, as long as Five is upright and healthy, this should be a dynamic offensive football team. Defense is the mystery. Defense is the question mark. But I could tell in my answer that both hosts were like, whoa! And I'm like, look, you got to understand. This is, you know, from somebody who hasn't thought much for basically 20 years about a season going into a season. Maybe it's not objective, but I certainly think you can make the argument that they've got the best quarterback and the best offense in the NFC. Maybe it's Detroit. The question comes down to defense. There's no doubt. Like, are they better on defense? Do they have to be a lot better on defense? Maybe not, but they got to be better to win double-digit games and have a chance to advance. Although I said something the other day, and I'm looking for what my buddy Steve sent me. I said something the other day. It's like, you know, with Jaden at quarterback, he's already proven that he's got that clutch gene. And we saw it in two different playoff games on the road. You just got to get into the tournament. You just got to get into the dance. With Jaden Daniels at quarterback, no team is going to want to see him come in January to their building. Just get in. I will have my season prediction next week in the build-up to week one. I'll give you my season prediction and give you guys a chance to do the same. I'm not backing off here at all. I think as long as he's on the field with the players that he will have around him on offense and that coordinator in year two, I definitely will be talking double-digit wins and the playoffs again. I think it's going to be interesting the rest of the conference. It certainly looks deep, but what will Detroit be without their two coordinators? What will Ben Johnson be able to accomplish with Caleb Williams in year one? Does Green Bay bounce back? Is Philly even better and more consistent in the regular season than they were last year? What are the Rams if Matt Stafford is healthy? What are the 49ers if their overall roster is healthy? What's Tampa now that they may have health on defense? It's a loaded conference, and there are going to be some incredible games on the schedule, incredible buildups on the schedule. I certainly hope so, you know, but, you know, just starting week two with the Packers, you know, going out to L.A. to face the Chargers in week five, that back-to-back Cowboys on the road, Chiefs on Monday night, the Lions at home, the Dolphins in Madrid, the matchup with Bo Nix on a Sunday night, at Minnesota, we'll see what the Vikings are this year, and then at the end of the year, Eagles, Cowboys, Eagles, but really, the Eagles twice in 3 weeks. This has a chance to be the highest profile season in many of your lifetimes. Can't wait for it to start. We're getting closer. Real college football, too, this weekend. We'll get to that with Stanford Steve. And Denton's going to be on the show tomorrow with us to talk some college football. In fact, Denton will be a weekly visitor on the show to do the same college football segment that we did last year. All right, when we come back, I want you to hear what SpotTrax owner, founder, and editor Michael Ginetti, what his initial instincts were upon hearing the news and what was reported yesterday about the deal for Terry McLaurin. That's next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike, dive into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar, Braving the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Avatar Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Prince Zuko.
Each week, we'll explore a new episode of The Legend of Korra.
Find your balance as we uncover breaking news, trivia, special guests, and so much more.
I mean, I've got some flameo hot takes that'll really light a spark. Follow and listen to Avatar Braving the Elements on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From Hal on Twitter. Thank you. My best friend Kevin dressed me down on a group text for caring so much about the deal. Curious is so much better than judgmental. See Ted Lasso. Yes! It's a really great scene in Ted Lasso during darts. How about just the idea of being interested to see how the organization handles contracts like Terry's? Of course. I mean, but it's beyond that. I mean, if we're being, you know, honest, it's the emotion. It's the wanting to see what it is, see how close you were. And it's what we've been talking about for all these months. How many calls were people, you know, I really think it's between 26 and 28 or 30 and 32 with this much guarantee, and then all of a sudden it happens and you're not interested? It makes no sense to me. But I think for some people it's just kind of, I don't know, it's like they're on some sort of performative kind of, hey, this sounds cool to be kind of above the fray. I don't know. I'm interested, so I guess I'm much below the fray. So I had Michael Ginetti from Spot Track. Spot Track, Spot Rack, I used to call it. It's wrong. It's Spot Track. Is the site that monitors and has all the details on player contracts, cap, information, etc. And the deal had just been, you know, reported on for a few hours. The 3 years up to $96 million, etc., with $30 million in signing bonus. And I asked Michael, you know, what are your initial thoughts? And is it important to kind of understand more than what's just been reported on this deal?
Yeah, the latter, the most important here, right, is we don't necessarily have nearly enough guts to fully assess this thing. And it's probably not a great sign that we don't know the guaranteed number just yet. And hopefully that comes out here soon. But look, we know enough to know that he's happy. He's going to be suiting back up, and that's obviously step one. The $96 million assessment, right, over 3 years of new, is certainly what the agent's been pushing for here. He wanted to be in that DK Metcalf conversation. Certainly wanted to be ahead of all the WR2s in the league. So you understand the number being there, but look, we'll see what this thing looks like over the next 2 years. We're hearing a $30 million signing bonus. That's very good news for this year because just on its surface, Kevin, that means minimum salary, the roster bonus he's already been paid, plus this signing bonus. He's in $34, $35 million range for 2025 alone. So, you know, $15 to $18 million pay raise this year, that's pretty good for step one. Now we've got to learn about 2026 and make sure that's fully guaranteed, or this could very well be a 1 for 35 and he's walking the door in March.
What do you think it'll be? Do you have a hunch?
I got to tell you, when I saw the numbers initially, even though these are surface numbers, my gut instinct, having done this now for so long, was, man, if he's getting that much this year, there's a really good chance that this is a one-and-done scenario, that he is probably not guaranteed next year. Now, look, he can play himself into year two and year three, no question about it. But I have a feeling that the concession that came from Terry McLaurin is I'll front-load myself with a bunch of cash this year, but I'm going to give in to the point where Washington can still get out of this thing in 2026. So we'll see if it gets there. I'm hoping not. I'm hoping this is a fully guaranteed two-year contract on its surface, but my gut instinct says it could be a 1 for 35.
So you when you view it on the best case for him, you view it as like a 2 year guarantee deal. What would that guarantee equal?
Yeah, fair market value, and what I kind of put out last week was 2 for 50.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can front load that at 30 and bring it down a little bit when he's 31 years old next year. You know, obviously now knowing what we know here with some of these early numbers, 2 for 60 is probably the fair market. You know, you want to be on a $30 million per year pace with your guarantees, because of the going rates of these wide receiver contracts. So anything under that 60 mark, I think, is probably a player concession. But like I said, I'm concerned that there's nothing after 30 at this point in time.
Interesting. Well, we'll find out, I guess, soon enough. How quickly do we usually find out? Doesn't this deal have to be reported by the team and the agent to... I mean, you end up with all of the details of all of these contracts. Typically, what is the time frame before we learn exactly what this deal is?
Yeah, generally speaking, we know a little bit more than we do right now, and this is about an hour now past where we've been when you and I are talking here, Kevin. So it's a little late today. The league will probably process this thing at 4 p.m. Eastern today. We'll start to hear more information tomorrow morning, I would guess, and then within 72 hours, because this is obviously a busy NFL time here with cutdowns, we'll know the full guts of this thing, but we should know within the next 24 hours just how strong the guarantees are over the course of the next two seasons.
Yeah, so the wide receiver market, and the first thing you said is, you know, at least the AAV puts him in number one wide receiver territory, meaning away from T. Higgins, you know, as an example. And I think that's the best example, right, of the number twos, that he's got the biggest number two deal in the league, I think, per spot track at $28.75 million a year. Why is that so important for the agent when really it's about where you are on the list of wide receivers, I would think, because Higgins just happens to play next to the best wide receiver in the league?
Yeah, there's no question. Look, this is just one of those posturing moves that agents still love to take, which is, you know, building out their own top 15, top 20 list, just like we all do, and, you know, fans and media and kind of left and right, up and down. But there's just a hierarchy that has to exist. And when you're talking about usage rate and things like that, you know, I know that you deal in the basketball world. That's a big term in the football world as well.
Yeah.
If you're out kicking your coverage, right, if your targets as a wide receiver are in the WR1 range, regardless of what your overall production looks like, there's a conversation to be had about being compensated fairly. And that's certainly in McLaurin's case, not only in 2024, which was his biggest usage year ever, but certainly going back the 5-6 years that he's been with the franchise.
Real quickly, not to spend a lot of time going backwards, but how did you arrive at what you tweeted out the other day as fair market value for Terry?
Yeah, so we go off a two-year production plan, right? And we take that two-year production and we match it, we kind of algorithmically AI match it with four other wide receivers that had very similar production in the 2 years leading up to their big wide receiver extension. So a lot of it happens behind the scenes, but the mathematically speaking, Terry McLaurin is about a $27.5, $28 million per year wide receiver just on its surface. And that's obviously with age being a part of it too. That's a factor that we take into consideration here. So, you know, it's hovering right around that top WR2 number in terms of fair market. And oh, by the way, you know, the $96 million plus the 19 and change that he was already going to make from his previous contract, you do that over 4 years and you're at $28 million a year. So you can understand how these numbers all kind of come together, Kevin, but any way the agent can sell it as top billing, he's going to do it, and I think that's what we're seeing here in a pretty nice performance from Buddy Baker out there.
So is that really how you're viewing it? I mean, I want to cut to the chase here. It sounds to me like maybe you feel like the team's letting the agent have his day today.
There's no question. Generally speaking, we see it from both sides fairly quickly. You know, the Adam Schefters, the Rap Sheets of the world, they get their information from both sides. You see two different facsimiles versions are sent out, and we're just not seeing that Washington side yet. And that could just be that they're busy because, you know, there's 40 people to cut on every roster right now. It could also be that the agent has jumped the gun a little bit here and he's just trying to make sure that the world knows that McLaurin is not in the same boat as these other hold-ins players that are heading towards, you know, the final week of the offseason here without a contract. So we'll get some more information quickly, but it's great news. This is not a situation I thought we'd get to. I'm gonna be honest with that. I thought for sure that Washington had put their foot down. They were not going to budge, and that this was not going to be a situation that was going to be rectified in 2025. So it's excellent news on that front.
Very good. Real quickly, while I have you on, tell me what your thoughts are on Micah Parsons and whether or not they get something done before the season starts in Dallas.
Ooh, I'm going to need a soapbox here, Kevin. Okay. This one's tough. It's you got to come at that from both sides. If Dallas wants to get this done at this point in time, and I realize we've seen this story quite a bit, they're going to have to go into a different stratosphere. So if this thing was 38 to 40 million a year in February when the napkin offer was written to them, it's 45 million a year in terms of an average salary, a new average salary. It's just where we have to be. Miles Garrett didn't even really whine that much and got 40 million from the Cleveland Browns. And the Micah Parsons scenario from an age perspective, a production perspective, is just markedly better than that. So you're going to have to blow him away, I think, to even get him off of that table, training table, and listening to an offer right now, and especially because I'm pretty sure his agent has all but blocked Jerry Jones' phone number at this point in time. So the number is going to have to be absurd if we're talking about a brand-new extension. Outside of that, from the player's perspective, Kevin, I'm not sure I'm picking up that phone. I really am not. I don't know if Micah Parsons is going to show up for week one. We'll see how that works in terms of a hold-in versus a hold-out and if he starts losing money. But I really do think this is a scenario where Micah Parsons and the agent have come together and said, we're going to be the ones that put our foot down and keep it down with this organization. And if that gets to a trade, so be it. Otherwise, this could be quite the story for the next at least 6 to 7 weeks before we start talking about.
That was Michael Jannetty from yesterday, shortly after the news broke. A lot of experience in contracts. Talked to an agent who said sort of the same thing, major red flag that there wasn't more information specific to the guaranteed dollars. But who knows? We'll find out. I mean, I can be patient, and hopefully some of you can be patient before sort of assessing the deal. You know, there's more than just who won or who lost. There is, how did the team handle this? You know, we may look back and say, wow, it was a waste of time. I have a feeling that's not really going to be the narrative, regardless of, you know, what looks like the winner of the deal or the loser of the deal, or maybe both won or both lost a little bit, which usually makes for the best deals. The reporting now is pretty concrete, including Ben Standing and Diana Russini. Diana Russini said in her on a podcast that the initial ask wasn't just above Justin Jefferson. It was at Ja'Marr Chase territory. He wanted to be paid as the number one, worst case, number two receiver in the league. And the reason I say that is for those that would say it should have been done months ago. Well, if they started Terry and his agent at well north of $35 million per year, which, by the way, I've also heard well north of like $70 million in guaranteed money, approaching sort of Jefferson and Chase money. That's like $100 million plus in guaranteed money. He was probably initially looking for $80 million in guaranteed money. Ben reported that $25 million was the first offer from Washington. That is a huge difference. That's why it didn't happen quickly. Like, you know, 41 to 25 or 40 to 25, or even if it was just barely over Justin Jefferson, 36 and 25, you know, you're talking about $11 million in AAV times, let's just call it a three-year extension. That's $33 million worth of difference in, you know, in the actual value of on an annual basis. And it's probably the difference, you know, in $20 to $30 million of guaranteed money. That's why it took so long. That is the most reasonable answer as to why it took so long. It's because they both started so far apart. And then there were feelings and emotions involved, as there often is. Hard not to have them, but best to realize what they are because they typically are not necessarily good deal makers like they are war starters. Interesting thoughts from a guy with a lot of experience. But again, he could be wrong. A lot of the people who have said the silence on the guaranteed dollars is deafening. Had an agent tell me major red flag. In fact, I'll read the text to you. Where is it? Yeah, red flag. The lack of details, a red flag. Biggest indicator is that it's not as perceived was the report that it's up to. The up to was a big red flag for agents anyway. By the way, I also saw it reported as 96 or maybe more than 96. We just don't know. We will know. Maybe later today. I would say worst case tomorrow, because tomorrow Adam Peters is scheduled to speak. Terry's not having a press conference. I don't think he wanted one. He had that with his last big signing in 2022, but he is scheduled to meet the media after practice. I don't know if that's a podium deal or if that will be sort of, everybody gathered around him. We'll see. But he's scheduled to talk after practice tomorrow. The good news is he'll be at practice. I think he was going to be at practice anyway. And we hope that it is in the best of environments now for him and the team moving forward. This was a tweet from Mike. Mike, a different view, he writes, Kevin. Jaden Daniels won this deal. He's elite under a rookie contract, and they didn't want to waste any momentum and time. The deal needed to be made if the push was in view. Glad it got done on all sides. Yeah, I agree. I think he was going to have to play one way or the other, but this is a much better way to play, for sure. Let me just be very clear about something. If we do learn that the details are Terry and his agent crushed the team in this deal and the team really caved, I don't think that will be something that will be ignored. Not by me, anyway. And this is going to be our first experience with Adam Peters and a negotiation with a big-name player for a big-dollar contract. And it's very important that you have super sharp people in your front office understanding the short term and also understanding the long term consequences to these deals. And my sense is that Adam Peters is sharp and that the team around him, Lance Newmark and company, sharp, and that I'd like to think that they didn't get taken to the cleaners and cave, a week and a half before, 2 weeks before the season started. But we'll know that later on. It's possible that they did. Anything's possible right now. Anything is possible, said Kevin Garnett once, long ago. Sean Springs is going to join us at 11 a.m. There was NFL news yesterday, including Trey Hendrickson. Deadlines are getting closer to deadlines to make deals. Well, they got one done in Cincinnati. There is a quarterback on the market that might make for a really good backup quarterback if Marcus Mariota isn't ready to go in the opener. We'll talk about him when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, and the Team980.com. Don't forget, you can watch us on the Team 980's YouTube page. Please hit the like button when you get to that 980 YouTube page, and hit the subscribe button as well.
All right, here's what's happening on this Tuesday, August 26th. Two of the NFL's biggest holdouts ended yesterday. First, as we all know, with Terry McLaurin signing his three-year, $96 million extension to remain in Washington. Then, Trey Hendrickson and his camp came to a deal with the Cincinnati Bengals to play out this year with a $14 million pay bump. He's now set to make $30 million this season. And loads of movement around the NFL as we rapidly approach the 4 p.m. cut deadline. The Raiders are very active yesterday as they traded for quarterback Kenny Pickett and signed Amari Cooper to a one-year deal. Running back Audric Estime was waived by the Broncos, and the Giants are releasing quarterback Tommy DeVito, and longtime NFL tackle Dan Skipper was released by the Lions. The Commanders have released linebacker Duke Riley, corner Esong Bassey, defensive tackle Norrell Pollard, center Nick Harris, tackle Tyree Phillips, and wide receivers Braylon Sanders and Michael Gallup. The Nats, they lose to the Yankees by a score of 10-5 last night. Tough night for Brad Lord as he goes 4 1/3 innings, giving up 7 runs on 8 hits. Cam Schlittler had a phenomenal night, throwing 6 scoreless innings, including 8 strikeouts. The Nats will reset versus the Yankees tonight. First pitch at 7:05. Nats on deck with Charlie and Dave at 6:35 on the Fan. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live every day from 10 to 1. You can catch Den's office throughout all football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you do decide to join us and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Dive into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar, Braving the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Avatar Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Prince Zuko.
Each week, we'll explore a new episode of The Legend of Korra.
Find your balance as we uncover breaking news, trivia, special guests, and so much more.
I mean, I've got some flameo hot takes that'll really light a spark. Follow and listen to Avatar Braving the Elements on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So today is cut down day, 2:53 by 4 p.m. Eastern. Keep it here on the Team 980 all day long, and we will keep you posted on the cuts. They cut six players yesterday. The cornerback Bassey that they had just brought in and signed after a bunch of workouts about a week and a half ago. Michael Gallup got released. Center Nick Harris, the tackle Phillips, the D-tackle Pollard, and the wide receiver Braylon Sanders were released yesterday. Today, cornerback Bobby Price was released. And I think Keim just had another one. Is Duke Riley? Did they release Duke Riley?
They have. Duke Riley okay. He was one of the ones announced this morning as well.
Okay, so I think that the guy number 51 that I've liked the last 2 weeks.
I think Ollie's on the roster.
I think Cahoe is going to make the roster.
Guy flies around. He's got ties to Ken Norton. I mean, it's all the signs are all there.
What you mean because of UCLA?
Yeah.
Yeah. So does Medrano.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Real quickly, before I get to some of the other NFL news, I watched the first, after the Venus match last night, I watched the first three episodes of this Cowboys Netflix thing.
Oh, boy. I can't wait to hear about this.
It is so good. And I've got a new perspective on Jerry Jones. I mean, this guy is, he's just the, you know, incredibly tough and resilient serial entrepreneur. And he was a hustler. He came from a blue-collar upbringing. His father owned a grocery store. They lived above it. He worked it. He had so many different jobs, started so many different businesses, and then got into the oil business. And that's what basically, you know, he was $50 million in debt and hit a big gusher, and that started his ascent into being able to be a legitimate player for the Dallas Cowboys. There's also a story in there where he almost was backed by Jimmy Hoffa and the Mafia in an attempt to buy the then AFL Chargers, and his father talked him out of it. He said, "What happens when you don't pay them for the first time?" And he said he was crushed, but his father was obviously right. There's some really good stuff on the Washington-Dallas 1991 regular season game at RFK, where the Skins were 11-0, looking to be, you know, the 72 Dolphins, and the Cowboys came in and ended the Washington attempt at a perfect season. And this was a significant game for those Jimmy Johnson, Jerry Jones, Troy Emmett, Michael Irvin, Cowboys. To go into RFK and beat the team that was the best team in the NFL, it was like the first time they started to believe, and they ended up making the playoffs that year. And real quickly, because I do remember this, I didn't remember to the extent that Steve Berline and Troy Aikman were going, you know, when Aikman became healthy, the controversy at the end of the year. But Berline came in and finished that game when Aikman got hurt at RFK. Berline ran the table as the starter the rest of the way. Aikman was healthy for the playoff game against the Bears in the wild card round. And at first, Jimmy essentially gave Troy indication that he was going to start the game, but he started Berline, and Berline won. And then it was the Detroit game in the divisional round, and the Lions blasted the Cowboys 31-3, I think, or 31-10, and then came to RFK for the NFC Championship game. But I didn't remember the controversy of Aikman and Berline when Aikman got healthy. healthy. It makes sense. Really well done, you know, like all these Netflix things. I think it was G from the Shop who said, you're going to need to watch this. Forget how we feel about the Cowboys. It's good. And I don't even think I've gotten to the good stuff yet. I haven't gotten to the White House. I haven't gotten to all the shenanigans as they started to win Super Bowls. Looking forward to that. Yesterday, after Terry's announcement, Trey Hendrickson ended his hold-in. He's going to get a $14 million one-year raise from the Bengals, boosting his 2025 salary up to $30 million. He's got some incentives in there as well. But this allows him, with no ability next year, franchise tag-wise, I guess the franchise tag was negotiated into it, Hendrickson can become an unrestricted free agent after this year. So next year's offseason, there will be a chase for a 31-year-old pass rusher if he has another big year for the Bengals. Man, the Bengals are going to be an interesting NFL story this year. Like Washington, loaded on offense, explosive on offense, going to be hard to slow down and stop on offense, but what will their defense be? And they're in a division with Baltimore and Pittsburgh. No one wanted to see them had they made the postseason last year. How about this? The Giants released Tommy DeVito. And this morning on ESPN, there was like the breaking news moniker. Giants release Tommy DeVito. And I'm thinking to myself, that qualifies as breaking news? But you know what? DeVito has started like 14 games in the NFL, and he's played well when he's had the opportunity to start. Including, by the way, if you recall, back in 2023 here, when he beat Washington and threw like three or four touchdown passes. I'm looking up what I think this may have been his best game. November 19th, 2023, came in, beat Washington 31-19. He was 18 of 26 for 246 yards and three touchdowns, no picks in the game. If Washington has an issue with Marcus Mariota, we'll find out here in the next week, I'm sure. I can't imagine Hartman's going to be kept. I would imagine that Josh Johnson's going to be kept at least for the time being. But would they go out and sign somebody else? Jeff Driscoll's still out there to be the backup, at least early on, until Mariota's healthy. This NFL talk on the Team 980, presented by Paramount Plus. You can count on much. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Sean Springs next.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Dive into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar, Braving the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Avatar Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Prince Zuko.
Each week, we'll explore a new episode of The Legend of Korra.
Find your balance as we uncover breaking news, trivia, special guests, and so much more.
I mean, I've got some flameo hot takes that'll really light a spark. Follow and listen to Avatar Braving the Elements on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.